Season 4, Episode 5 of the Decoded Podcast. I'm Roland Chidiak, he's Chris Clough. And the on-ramp today was, I think, one of the coolest on-ramps that I can recall.
Front-end geometry.
Front-end, a little bit of front-end geometry. Some foul language to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. So let me break it down for people. And then...
Wi-Fi strength. Yeah.
Let's envelop this conversation.
I love it.
Okay, so Chris and I are chatting on ramp. Hey, how you doing? How's this? How's that? And he had to take his car into the shop for some work, oil change and stuff. And as we're sitting here chatting on the on ramp, his phone rings, and it's the shop. So Chris is like, "Hold on." And I'm thinking he's going to mute his mic or whatever. No muting mic. He's got this on speaker. And, oh, I just held up my cell phone for Shref. He's the only one that listens to us, not watches us. But
true.
Anyway, so then Chris is talking to the service rep.
Steve.
He's chatting with Steve. And I'm listening to Steve and Chris talk about the car. It was kind of surreal. It was really cool. And Steve dropped the term front-end geometry, which totally then turned Chris on pedagogically. And then anyway, it was something. It was something to behold. It was interesting.
It's a great term, front-end geometry, because the issue with the car is that there's a rattle. And there's something that's happening with the sway bars. So the thing that keeps the tires kind of moving and dancing in unison. So it's not a safety issue, but it's a noticeable sound. So that's what Steve dropped. He said, yeah, it does. It does change the front end geometry. And he keeps talking. I'm like, wait a second. That's a great term, front end geometry. Because it's just... It just felt like a really great key term. It made me think of school. It made me think of the math course that I'm doing, the Learning Strats math course right now. And there's just something, I don't know what it is. The term just catches in my brain a little bit because it completely explains, like it illuminated so clearly how the work that I was, you know, deciding whether or not to pay for, how it, the impact of it on the how the geometry, the shape of the car, the shape of the wheels. It was cool. I liked it. And I said it to Jids, like, I got to work this into a conversation today. I guess I just did.
Okay. So what it's good. And I don't want to take away from it. It felt like we were on one of those investigative report shows
yeah.
where you set things up for to
like the hidden camera.
But this worked great for Steve because I thought everything he said was legitimate. I felt like you guys were talking real talk. I did not. As soon as you asked him if the repairs to your car were necessary, as soon as you asked him, that's the test. That's to see, are they just jumping for the money? And he didn't. He told you straight up, you know what, this is not a safety concern, the way that it was explained at the moment. This isn't a safety concern. You could do this later if you wanted to. And I'm like, this is good. Steve's good. This is good. And then it was funny because it seemed like you dug yourself into a hole. From my perspective, your response to him with then your probing questions around it, you turned it into a safety concern. Like the way you were talking about the winter and stuff, Steve was like, well, hold on. When you put it that way, yeah, I mean, in extreme weather conditions, this could be a safety issue. And I'm over here dying because I'm like, Clough, you just turned it into, it's like Clough wants to spend hundreds of dollars on the car secretly. Don't tell his wife. He wants to spend the money.
I needed to know the depth. The probing part is right. Sometimes you do got to take a it was risky language. If I were the person that you're describing right now, like I want to spend the money, then yeah, that was a risky move because all of a sudden my brain is like, hey, Clough, ask this question just in case. But my brain is actually saying, push the conversation as far as the individual is willing to talk. Keep asking more questions. I'm still going to decide either way. I'm still going to decide either way. But I really appreciated him saying that in extreme driving conditions, or if I'm overturning, if I was really turning hard, that the front end geometry will be a safety issue. So I just have more information now. That's what it comes down to. I have more information. And ultimately, you know, I decided not to pay for this adjustment, but I got some other work done instead, right? So,
and I'm partly playing with you, as you know, right? Mm-hmm. I just enjoyed the conversation. It was so cool to hear the back and forth and to see, is this dude going to be a stand-up guy, or is he going to, you know, go for the low-hanging fruit and tell you, no, you really should do this kind of thing. So it's cool. I mean, there's nothing more satisfying than talking to an individual who's just being straight with you and not messing around. And when that happens, you build rapport, you build relationship. And, you know, I started telling you about my connection with my service advisor at the shop where I take my car.
And you're dedicated. You're dedicated. You know, I appreciated you talking about how dedicated you are to maintaining that connection.
Oh, it's important because there's straight talk involved, and there's consideration. People, when you get to know people in an authentic way, there is some care for them, right? Like, and I say all that loosely because I don't know my service advisor, but I know that she's always been honest with me, and I've seen it in different situations, not just I pull up, I go to the desk, she's there. Her and I have chatted in different, like when I had an issue with my last car, we had a straight talk outside in the parking lot. You know, I've seen her talking to other people in the reception area when you were allowed to sit in the reception area. So like I've seen her do her thing with other people and talk to me in different kind of contexts. And all that put together is I want to deal with that person. I don't want to deal with this person or that person, to the point where it's funny. The last time I was there, and I told you this, I pulled up and you kind of wait outside. This is before COVID. You pull up and they have like a drive-through garage and you wait your turn to go in. Then you park your car, you get out, you talk to the service advisor, and there's a bunch of service advisors. So I pull up and somebody comes to my window to check in on me. And they're like, okay, I'll be happy to help you. I'm like, no, you're not helping me. I'm here for her. She's going to help me. And they look at you kind of like, oh, but I'm free. I'm really happy that you've got a moment. Check with the car behind me. I'm meeting with her. So I'm willing to wait to talk to her.
I think it's also someone that is not clear on the power of relationships quite yet.
Possibly. Or just someone who's
working. Yeah, but I wholly believe it, because in that moment, if there was any sort of look on their face of confusion, like, how am I not enough? How am I not enough to be able to help you? I think in a lot of ways, that's a salesperson recognizing that there's more to sales and service than just being able to represent a product. Mm-hmm. And that's what I get in that moment. Like, I've had that happen too, where I said, I'm waiting for that person over there. And just by the fact that you say you're waiting, you trigger some real problematic reactions in a person, because they may have a system in there where it's not good for people to be waiting, that you need to approach a person and engage. Like, these are all sales tactics. I will tell you, even back in the day running the restaurants, we had a very clear protocol for the amount of time that a client would be sitting at the table. You had to hit the table to greet them within X amount of time. You had to be back at the table with their first drinks within X amount of time. It was part of the policy, was part of the training. We didn't often talk about it as guest relations and we didn't talk about guest relations from the point of view of actually enjoying the relationship you were building. We talked about it entirely from an efficiency and business model. And this is probably part of what this person who first asked you, you know, can I help you, was operating under. I think it was just an honest, they thought for sure that this was just going to be a commodity transaction.
And I was going to go there too. I'm glad you went there, because the next level was going to be me telling you that sometimes the senior management, they're all about efficiency, right? Because they're looking at bottom lines. They're looking at how can we get more cars in to make more money. how can we satisfy customers, even if they're thinking that, by getting them in and out as fast as we can? And so, yeah, you're going to approach the car and you're going to say, hey, if a service advisor is free, get your rear end outside to the next available car and say, I'm John, I'm going to be helping you out today. When you pull in, come here. And I was like, no, she's helping me. And it was funny because as I was talking to him, she looked, for some reason, she looked out the garage door and she saw me and waved. So she's like, hey, he's back for his service kind of thing, right? So it's like, it's interesting. But I was like, no, I don't want to deal with you. It's nothing against you. I have a relationship with that person and I trust that person as far as I can in this situation. Yeah. And so I want to deal with her. I don't want to establish a new relationship if I don't have to. But anyway, speaking of like you having to deal with the car today, and you were telling me before we started that we were going to punch out at a particular time because you're going to go and live your life. I have this craving to get my drone up in the air today over a forested area to try to catch some fall color.
Dude, it's gorgeous. It suddenly is gorgeous out there.
I've actually been seeing it on my ride to work. I drive down this one particular road, old neighborhood, huge trees, and I'm seeing the colors and I'm like, this is the weekend. So I don't know. I need to kind of brainstorm where I'm going to go, but I need to get out today and I need to get the drone up because, it's just one of those things that feels like it's going to feed my soul. Like people are posting pictures of them being outdoors and doing stuff. And I love it. This is what I need to feed my soul. I need to get that drone up in the air over a forested area and get some footage of the foliage and the fall colors, fall foliage, right?
Yeah.
I got to do it today because I need to see it. Like, never mind taking that video and then adding music and some layers to make it more visually appealing. I literally want to stand there and stare at it from my phone, from the sky.
I'm happy for you that you're going to do this. I'm also a little jealous because I don't know if, well, because here, the one thing that I love about your drone footage or just, you know, drone footage in general. And I don't know if we've completely, I don't know if it's, I think it's still kind of on the new kind of scale that, you know, average folk can go out and capture cool perspectives and angles in with video because they're using a drone. Like, I think it's still fairly fresh and new, at least I'll say definitely in educational contexts. We tend to have ground floor video all the time. Like really, let's say 90% of the time you see any video of a graduation ceremony or a sports team game. I haven't come a lot of schools that are capturing drone video to get a better perspective. Right. So I'm jealous because you can create these looks for people because one, cause there's a newness to it and it generates a little bit of buzz and conversation. Two, it's a cool medium just to experiment with, because even if all you're using it for is a vertical picture just to get up high enough to see something, that's still a perspective. I told you when my son was watching your church video, he knew it was a drone, but he still asked how did Roland get like that high? And I said, he has a drone. And he kind of, because the other part too is he had never seen a drone flown inside before. So again, there's you kind of have a cool piece of tech. The cool piece of tech gets cool footage in general. It's still fairly new, I think, from an educational perspective to include drone video and drone video that you're the creator for. So the teacher's actually using the drone to capture video for, you know, whatever. So you're in that cool creator space. Another part to it, it feels like it's, whenever I see drone footage, something in my brain goes, I feel like I'm witnessing something that I've never been able to ask questions about before because I only suspected what it looked like. So you walk past a building, you look up, you see a roof, and you might hear air conditioners. I don't know, you might see birds sitting there, but you don't always get to go up and look at the roof. You walk through a forest, you look up, you see the trees, maybe some leaves are falling down, you know, you see the sky. But to see it from the other perspective, looking down through the trees, you don't always get that. So it gets you, it improves your ability to ask questions that you didn't even realize were interesting to you before. So that's, there's my jealousy. There's my jealousy in a, in an overly Clough explanation.
Well, I'm sorry that you're jealous because that's not good, but I do appreciate your appreciation of, I guess, the results that could come from me experimenting with it. Right. And I'm really excited that I have the ability and the equipment to be able to do that. I love the fall. You know, it's a shame that school has to start in the fall because I don't like the start of school, but I love it. And it's just so cool. I guess it was one more layer of me getting through this week.
Yeah.
Was the driving to work and seeing the colors that are in front of me as I'm driving. What does it look like from above?
Yeah.
Right. So I'm really pumped. I'm going to get out and do that today. I have to. Since we were talking about Shreff, I want to go back to Shreff. He makes me laugh. Like, I was laughing so hard when, I don't remember. I think it was, I was home one day this week and, I had some time, so I just went ahead and I realized, holy cow, I hadn't posted 4 of our podcast episodes. So I just literally took the time to do it and push them out. And lo and behold, you know, Shreff responds with a tweet saying, I guess Roland had a free hour because he just slammed me with 4 new episodes. And that brought a smile to my face. I'm literally looking around me at all times for what is going to bring a smile to my face, right? Like, and there are moments that before COVID where I would have never really looked in those spaces or places to bring me joy.
Tell me, share. Like what?
Okay. So here's a COVID gift, I guess, because it's all because of COVID that this happened, that I'm experiencing this. So when I'm at work with my buddy Mike, I don't even think I can talk to you without laughing because we get ourselves into situations that just bring us joy, whether it's the way we interpret something happening around us or a joke or whatever. So I found myself yesterday, we were eating lunch and he said something in a way that where I could infer what he was trying to get at. And it made me laugh out loud. And I literally, as I was enjoying that laughter, I was able to step out of myself and look down on the situation and mark it, archive it. I was like, click, keep that one in your head for when you're not feeling good or whatever. That's just one example. Another example would be, so on my walk this morning, as you know, I was experimenting with my phone and taking pictures and doing kind of fun things with them. And so I'm walking, right? I pull out the phone and I stop. And my head says, oh, you're obviously going to be out longer today if you keep stopping and taking photos. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know what? Again, I got myself out of me and looked down on the situation, said, no, you need this. Click, mark it. You need this. This is part of what's going to bring you some joy. And then I took my pictures. I kept walking. And as I was doing my exercise, I was able to put some stuff together. And I was really happy with my creation. And it was like those moments, though, those small moments, they've never impacted me as much as they're impacting me now. Here's another one. Yesterday morning, my son had a 7 a.m. hockey practice. So I'm up before everybody. I go do my exercise, wake up my kid. Here's the moment for me where I marked it. My kid's sitting in a chair at the rink. He's got his skates on and it's time for me to tie his skates. Who cares, right? What's the big deal? You're tying your kid's skates. That moment where I clicked and marked it is the moment where I have this wonderful opportunity with my son to be talking to him in a way from a perspective that I never get. So when I'm tying his skates, it's not, we're not communicating. I'm like, what are you going to do out there? What's your plan? How are you feeling? It's like a father-son moment that I marked.
Mm-hmm. And
to anybody else looking around at me is like, Roland's tying Will's skates. I'm not just tying his skates. It's that particular moment in time, 2 to 3 minutes of me physically doing something for him, but engaging him and him engaging me in a time and space right before he's about to go and do something that he needs to think about having fun and working hard. So I don't know if I clearly explained it to you, but those are three examples of like moments that I'm literally, I stop and I recognize the moment and I'm gracious for it, right? There's gratitude there. And those little tidbits are keeping me going right now. And there's lots of them. Like now that I've kind of opened Pandora's box, I could tell you about some that are happening in the classroom with my students, but I don't want to go there. But these little things, I'm marking them. And I'm stepping out of myself to recognize that it's an opportunity for happiness and growth at the same time that I've never really required the way I feel I require it now.
Yeah, that's good, man. I had a small moment of that, something like that with Jake. So last Friday, we were coming back from a doctor's appointment and we were walking and we held hands. Just walking, holding my son's hand. Like normally when I walk beside him, I'll put my hand on his shoulder. But I just grabbed his hand and it was interesting because I'm not sure why I did. Maybe it's just a thought. Maybe something in it was, you know, it felt like, well, try this. He used to, I mean, both kids do sometimes, but I find they're initiating it less these days. More when they kind of come up beside me, I'll put my hand around their shoulder or they'll put their sort of arm kind of around my waist as we're walking and talking. So it was the same thing. And I thought to myself, like that, it felt good. It felt good. And I, like, who knows what anybody was sort of thinking or noticing. There was nobody. It was broad daylight. We walked through the park. We were walking back to the house. The place where we had the doctor's appointment is, hospital's pretty close to my house. So we can actually walk there. But it's very similar. I had that moment of like noticing a moment and just kind of settling into it.
I'm actually craving it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I find myself craving it. Like I said, with the getting the drone in the air, it's not just, wanting to do something cool and create. It's like a moment that's going to give me more than that. And so I'm seeking that. I like what you said, noticing the moment. That may be the title of this podcast episode, but I'm now craving it because I've worked so hard to get to the weekend and I've become that guy. Here's a full disclosure. Let me be honest with you. I've become that guy that's living for the weekend. And I'm not going to pretend it's not happening. At this particular time in my life, I'm living for Saturday and Sunday and Friday night. That's what I'm living for. Do I want to live like that? No. Like I would like to just wake up every day and just be blessed and happy with the day as it comes. I really would. And I have lived like that. But I've also lived for the weekend before. And so I find myself every day, I find myself like pumping myself up to go to work and to do my job and then leave work and come home and do what needs to happen here at home. But right now I'm living for the weekends. And so I, as you would say, I'm guarding the weekend, protecting the weekend, you know,
protecting. I just told that to the kids again yesterday. I actually put it in a Kahoot. I like to do these little sort of like when we arrive at kind of like the end of a learning cycle on something and we're coming up to a unit summative, I'll put together some Kahoots and the Kahoots have not only content from the class. Here's how I reveal into the world. Here's if I ever use Kahoot, here's what I like to use it for. I will put in kind of random funny pictures and then ask a question about it. I will ask the kids questions of review about stories that I know that I've told in relation to curriculum along the way. And I'll also things that are entirely curriculum connected. Because one of the things that I've found is any one of those three things tap into the kids' learning. So one of the things that I put in there, and often, you know, all four questions you can get, like I'll have four answers on a multiple choice, and all four of them are four almost entirely different answers connected to a piece of curriculum content, but they're all correct. It's just different pieces of it. So back to the Protect the Weekend, that was one of them. Because I tell the kids, you know, often Protect the Weekend can mean get the work done in class so that you have some free time. It's enjoy the free time when you notice it. I also say three, create activities that allow you to expand your free time and remember it. And the fourth choice I put in there, lock your doors because it's the zombie apocalypse. So the kids had a 3 out of 4 chance of picking up points, but the Protect the Weekend is so important. So important.
I loved what you did. You posted something around Wednesday and you said, hey, these are really cool. People, if you don't know, it's my understanding, Chris, that you're typing up these little pieces of information for your students, but then you're posting them out on your Instagram, correct? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm catching snippets of them, right? And the one that really caught my eye was on Wednesday, you said something to your students about, hey, the weekend's coming. Start thinking about how you are going to protect that weekend. So don't wait till Friday and then be like, oh, this and this has to happen. It's Wednesday. Have some vision, have some strategy. What are you going to do or what are you going to start doing to protect your weekend? Mm-hmm. I feel like it spoke to me. You know, I was like, how am I going to protect my weekend? And you and I have talked about this before. Being teachers, there's no such thing for me to take like a true time off from September to the end of June. There isn't, because I could go to work and do everything I can at work. But sometimes there's going to be times in the evenings where I need to continue considering a lesson that I want to plan or reflecting on a unit that I've just done and thinking about assessment and evaluation. Like those things are still happening. It just looks different. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no bag of work. I don't want to bring that stuff home. Like, I don't want all the papers here. That's the other thing, too. You and I were talking about this on the on-ramp. This COVID business, it's like, I don't want to bring home 20 duotangs filled with papers that have been at school the whole time. I think it's a nightmare from a perspective of, like, germs and stuff. Sorry. But it is like, where am I gonna lay out all this stuff on my dining room table? It just doesn't sit well with me. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing everything I can at school to collect assessment data where I don't. And here's the other thing too. I've never been to bring all this stuff home because once I provide information on this work, by the time the kids get the feedback, it's not always too late, but it's so artificial. So I'd rather be in the classroom slowing things down, but being able to say to a child, holy cow, that is a great paragraph you just wrote.
Yes.
But you really need to consider punctuation, because if Mr. Chidiac read this out loud, I'd be out of gas halfway through because there's no periods, no commas. Like, you tell them that and then they start working on it. But if I'm going to bring home all these paragraphs and, you know, I'm like, oh, there's no punctuation. When it gets back to them, who cares? Like, they don't really care as much as in the moment.
Yeah.
And then people are like, well, why don't you go digital? Well, I can go digital if I have the equipment in the classroom to help my kids go digital, which I'm fortunate that way. And I'm starting to move in that direction. But I can't have everything digital. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some paper and pencil. I mean, these humans live on this earth. We haven't totally abolished paper and pencil. So long story short, I'm in, like, I know what my role is and I'm doing the best I can in my role, but I am working to protect my weekends like crazy. I'm finding moments and I'm looking for moments and I'm craving moments, mm-hmm, to hit pause and to enjoy the moment. Totally.
I want to throw props to, I think it's Monty Siri. he's on Insta. He's on Twitter as well. And for quite some time, he posts, I saw back in the day, he would write things for his class on his whiteboard, and he's still posting it. I think he's teaching virtually now. He's down in the States. His handle is at Monte Siri or Siri. And he's been sort of posting up his poetry and his relation, like his intentionality to reach out to his families and his students, and to share his personal growth, his professional growth. I find it genuine, and it connects with me on a lot of levels. So my Protect the Weekend, I was kind of doing separately from that, but it started to kind of take shape a little bit more when we post March 13th this year, where, you know, I'm actively using Google Classroom, where I would be posting stuff for the students, but then I thought I would like to have a way, because I felt like I was welcoming them well into the day, but I didn't have a sense of helping them to close their day and kind of move on. Because I think there is something too, when we talk about helping the students get organized, part of helping a student to get organized, I think, as well, is telling them when they've done enough and when they need to kind of stop, reassess, and move on. And I know this as a dad and as a teacher, noticing when you should stop is really difficult, really, really difficult. And that's kind of how the Protect the Weekend came about, talking to the students. And genuinely, for me, Wednesdays are the best day. Wednesdays are the day that I first start to notice the weekend. We talk a lot in class about the feeling of anticipation is a really cool feeling. And how do you sort of protect that and make sure that the anticipation isn't just kind of making you forget to get stuff done because you're so excited for something to happen. But it also is an anchoring kind of a thought that protecting the weekend, as I talk to my students and I've talked to my own children sometimes, it is that idea of just having something that you can rely on for downtime. So it's not only protecting it in advance, it's protecting it while you're in it. And it gets kind of complex and heady, but I'm finding some traction to it. So what I started to do this school year is I'm closing the class. I don't close it. The kids can still get their work. But I have actually, the first post that I posted as far as protecting the weekend, it was a reflection for the students when I saw work coming in quite late at night. And I told them to stop. I said, stop. I don't want you working on my class work after 9 p.m. I said, if you feel that you still have to or you can't get to it during the school day, let's talk about that. So creating the conversation about getting organized. The Wednesday post that I put up was, it was talking about sort of protect the weekend. Good evening, folks. Wednesdays are really the very best day to start thinking about protecting the weekend. What does that mean? Well, it kind of means make a plan, work the plan, and adjust as necessary. And the weekend can be an actual weekend or just a time at the end of your week when you can relax. If it's been too long since you have enjoyed some downtime, let me help. I have a ton of tools and rules to keep you on track. Let me help you to protect the weekend. Be well, Clough. So yeah, part of this is the writer in me just enjoying working through words, but it's also, it's strategic in looking to build better relationships with my school community and the students. And it's part of a larger sort of array of things that I'm doing for the families to stay connected and keep them informed. But I appreciate that you're calling it out because I think it is important. One of the first conversations I had with my grade nines was around, when does the day end? And it was fascinating. You put that question to a class. Some kids will say, when I go to bed. Some kids will say at midnight. Some kids will say when the work is done. But asking that question of your class really reveals a fascinating bit of information about how they're living their lives. When does the day end? When my parents tell me to go to bed? When a certain TV show is done? When my brother and I fight because we get sent to our rooms? Like, there was so many fascinating things, but nobody said when I decided to. Not a single kid.
That's fascinating. It is. And I guess I wonder if adults.
I think it's a.
No way.
I think it's a great question. I mean, I have. I will say right now, part of my personal wellness, it includes noticing all the cool stuff that you're mentioning too, in my own way. But I've mentioned to you as well. It's also I'm taking more active noticing of certain health things for me, and part of it is, you know, and Karen kind of laughs. But even last night, she's like, oh, you know, like, let's watch one more episode. I'm like, no, I need to get up at 5:30 a.m. That's a good date. That's a good time for me to wake up. So it's sort of 9:30. I'm hustling up to bed. But that's what I'm noticing, how I feel best. I need to have my, in order to be the best, and this is sort of, Monty Siri did a whole bunch of this about being better, you know. He was doing some posts about being better or be better. I forget which one, but that's me being better, knowing that that's when I need to sleep. But I also feel like that's also me deciding when the end of the day is, not the day deciding, not the work deciding, me deciding. And it's difficult because I feel like in a lot of ways, my self-regulation is outsourced. I don't often feel like I'm in direct contact with sometimes the decisions that guide my life. And I think some of the conversations you and I have had recently, that an uncomfortable conversation cannot just be about topic. It cannot just be about, there doesn't seem to be an escape. It can also be an uncomfortable conversation because you're choosing to stay in it. So I feel like I'm in an uncomfortable conversation with myself right now because I'm choosing to kind of confront or come head on at some of the things that I think I need in order to feel well right now. So, and a big part of that, you know, where this long explanation started is around protecting the weekend and who's going to be a part of it with me and what am I going to do with that?
Right. It's all good stuff. In fact, Ramona has jumped in, and while you were explaining your position, she says that, first she says, good morning. So good morning, Ramona.
Morning, Ramona.
She said, and for anybody who's not watching, I've got Ramona's comment up here on the screen. Doing schoolwork as she watches us right now, she wants to protect the weekend, but so hard with her having no prep time until after November 13th. I would love, Ramona, if you could dig into that a little bit and tell us why you don't have prep time until after November 13th. She does go on to say that, for her students, she asks them not to do any work on the weekend, and she doesn't assign homework except to ask them to do some pleasure reading if they have time. Now, as soon as I saw that, that for me is huge. I almost never assign students homework over the weekend, almost never. In fact, 98% of the time, so every morning my kids come into class and they write in their agenda. There's always a message for the day. So there might be a letter for the parents, there might be some word study homework, whatever the case is. Friday, it always says, have a great weekend. And already some of my students, they walk in on the Friday, they're like, I know what we have to write in our agenda. And I'm like, right on. There may be something else too, but that's always there. I never formally, 99% of the time, I don't formally assign anything because I want them to just go home, especially these days, how hard they're working and how different things are. It's mentally exhausting. If I'm mentally exhausted, they have to be mentally exhausted because they're operating as students in a way that we've not operated in this particular way with students. And you and I have talked about why I feel that way. I'm not going to get into it right now, but things are so different that the last thing they need is more work on the weekend. Ramona also says that she wanted to qualify her response about not assigning homework over the weekend. She says that right now, she has a group of 10 kids face-to-face 5 days a week, and only one student is learning from home. So, I mean, that's interesting in and of itself as well. I have 19 students in front of me every day, and I was just telling Chris in the on-ramp that not this coming week, but the day after Thanksgiving weekend, is the day that kids switch from remote to face-to-face or from face-to-face to remote in my board. And I just found out the other day that one of my students is leaving face-to-face and going remote, and that I have a student coming from remote to face-to-face. And what makes it, it's just interesting that there are these blocks where change is allowed to occur. And it's weird to have that built into the system now, because before it was just like fly by the seat of your pants. A family moves and they show up at the door and they're like, hi, we're here to register. We now live in your catchment area. That happens all the time. But now it's like a planned disruption. And what I mean by that is, well, it's a disruption for me. The student that's leaving me, I'm kind of sad that he's leaving. I didn't expect it. I've not heard from the parents. Like I didn't see it coming. I don't know why they're doing it. It's none of my business why, and I don't mean to say that I should know, but it's just weird. I didn't see it coming. And when I found out he was leaving, I was gently probing to see what was going on. And the child gave me no indication that they know that this is happening to them. So I didn't burst any bubbles. I didn't come out and say, hey, you're on a list. Nothing like that. It's just like, you know, I asked him, how are you doing? How's school? How's your sister doing? Because he's got an older sister. I'm like, everything's good. You're enjoying school? He's like, yeah, I love it. And I'm like, well, you're not going to be here in a week. So it's just one of those things. He gave no indication, which seriously, it makes me sad. I'm like, I just built a relationship with this kid. He's like an integral part of the room. They all are. And he's leaving. And then the new student that's coming in, nobody knows who he is. So the name doesn't sound familiar to anybody. So I'm assuming then that he's new to our school. And maybe that's why parents went remote at first, because they didn't know what school he'd be going to or whatever. And he's coming to my school. So nobody knows this student. So this poor kid's going to walk in, you know, to a class that's been together for a month and 2 weeks, and they're all flowing with the expectations and the routines. And we're going to have to support the new student in understanding our expectations, our routines, how things operate. You know, like I have to, I got to gather stuff for him, right? Like duotangs and equipment and whatever. But it's interesting. It's different than other years. And while I've been blabbing, Ramona, she explains that she's on a weird quadmester. I think, well, my son's part of a quadmester. Chris, are you guys doing quadmesters?
No, we're doing 4-period days.
Whoa, wild. Mm-hmm. So she says period one goes all day week one, and then period two goes all day the second week, and this continues until November 13th. Period three and four start after my prep P4, so no prep until then. I kind of get it now. And she goes on to tell us that prep week includes on calls and supervision duties. Wild. My son is doing two courses in this chunk of time, and they alternate between face-to-face for 5 days in the morning. And then in the afternoon, he does his other course, synchronous and asynchronous. And then after the 5 days of going to school, then he spends 5 days at home. And then the courses get, then the course he was doing face-to-face in the mornings when he was at school, now it's in the afternoon, synchronous and asynchronous. Every day we're like, okay, you're at home. So check the, and two different, one teacher's using Google Classroom and the other teacher's using D2L and Microsoft Teams. So my son is like, how do I work all this? And
the teachers might be doing that too. It's funny. There's, I have firsthand experience with some colleagues that are, they are using multiple tools. They're using multiple tools because they're not quite sure how to harmonize everything together. So there are some courses where I maybe some curricular areas, courses where there's all the tools that you would be using for, let's say, okay, let me back this up. One of the keys for me for teaching virtually is to make sure that I can kind of explode the kids out from a common space, and that when they go out into sort of individual resources, that there's a way to easily loop back to the common space. So every lesson for me we're working through a HyperDoc, and the HyperDoc is not only the launch pad, but it's also the graphic organizer for that lesson for the kids. And I have everything kind of embedded inside of there. I'm trying to keep the suite of multiple tools low, but their destination points rich. So they don't have to use a bunch of different tools in order to travel to, let's say, a website or to see a video or to work with each other. I keep trying to think of design that way. There are some teachers that if I'm using one hub to launch the kid, they're using multiple hubs. So one day it might be out of Google Classroom, another day it might be out of another space. And I just think for me, that's way too complex a way to feel. I have the luxury of not designing that way. I can design it out of that HyperDoc, and I've sort of worked with the kids so they're comfortable doing their learning that way. So some teachers, they're not actually intentionally designing these things that are so kaleidoscopically complex. They're just kind of in a space where maybe they don't see how to make it kind of reduce it down to something simpler. So, and a lot of teachers are test driving their new virtual selves. So that tends to be rather, I think that tends to be a lot more dispersed. That can be on one end, like nothing, like you're only sort of like just sipping at some of that digital tools, but it can also look at the other side, like I have to use all these things to keep the kids connected. And it's just like, boom, I'm trying to hit the sweet spot in the middle.
That's cool. I mean, I get it. I'm really happy that my son is learning how to use mm-hmm. these tools.
Right? So important to be cognizant of that as well. It's not just a vehicle to take them there. It's a learning experience so they can see how they're getting there. Right. And so they're actually, I'm trying to reveal that as well. So it's not just the why behind me choosing it. It's the, here's how you can actually do this for yourself next time. So
it's funny because yesterday I came home from work. I was the first one home, and my son had to post a discussion comment in D2L. And I get home and he's like, "Hey dad, can you help me with this?" And I said, "What's up? Like, what do you need to do?" He said, I need to post a discussion paragraph. I said, "Okay, what's the topic? What did you learn?" And it was like, he's like, "This is what it was about. These are the videos I watched, this is the article I read," and it's all there within D2L. And I said, "Okay, so what's stopping you?" He's like, "Well, I want to make sure you or mom kind of hear my ideas out and then read it over and make sure, like," because he's not good with, writing is not good for him. It's one of the areas he's accommodated in. So he's like, "Yeah, I need somebody to look at it and tell me, hey, you're missing punctuation. You don't have characters here." Like, he's like, "I'm not posting this and have my friends make fun of me. The content might be right, but the look of it's not going to be, and I don't want that." And I'm like, "That's fair." So again, that was another moment. I had a moment there because I was like, it was a cool moment of me helping my son, who took the bull by the horns and did his heavy lifting. And now it was time for me to help carry a bit of that load for him, right? Or help him strategize on how to carry it better.
Yeah.
So we did that and he posted it and I'm like, "What else do you have?" He's like, "Nothing." And I'm like, "Have you gotten any feedback from your teacher on these assignments or whatever? Because hey, if my wife and I are like supporting him and providing him with the accommodations, we want to see how he's doing." He's like, I can't find any feedback from one teacher." And I'm like, "Well, show me where you go." And it was really cool to see him navigate the tool, the learning management system. He's like, "Well, here it says there's feedback. When I click on it, it just shows my assignment that I handed in." There is nothing from the teacher there. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to have to dig deeper. But it was interesting because I had no clue where to go. He led me there, which is really awesome that he's learning how to do these things, you know, because he's going to need to continue to do these things. Right now, he's taking geography and tech, which is hilarious because the tech projects are kind of fun if you don't have any other stress on your plate. But when you do, it's kind of a burden. So one of his tech projects is he had to plan a meal and cook it. And then we had to take pictures and video and share that with the teacher. And it
that's right. And that's right in your wheelhouse. Like to be able to do that in the Chidiac house, you're in good space between the cooking and the filming.
And then the second thing was, which was funny because my wife was like, this is all you. I did the first one. You're doing this one. He had to make a pair of sandals out of cardboard. And there were some requirements. So again, him and I, we plan like, this, my son needs help with these things, the planning, the strategy, the execution. And it was funny because I had planned to do this over a weekend, last weekend. He's looking at me like, we're going to spend the weekend doing this. I'm like, well, there's no other time to do it, man. Like your brother's at hockey or this is happening on this time, whatever. I'm like, Saturday we'll do this. Sunday we'll do this. It's like, okay, and it worked out nicely. I don't know how he did, but he created a pair of sandals that he's been wearing around the house, so he finds them comfortable.
That's awesome.
And they've not broken apart, so obviously they've been designed well and built well, so it's kind of funny.
That is funny.
Anyway, on that note, I think we're good for today, man.
Yeah, there's good. Here's my pick.
What did you draw? It's a human with his hand on his forehead looking down. Do you want to elaborate any more on that, Chris? Or do you just want to leave that to everybody's interpretation if they're watching?
Protect the weekend. That's all it is. Sometimes the week can be like this. Also, this past week, my students started talking about stress and anxiety, which is a good first opportunity to work through some mentorship in class and create small space conversations for students so they can start to, the fact that it's being mentioned, I measure as a, like they're starting to feel safe. They're starting to feel like they want some help and they want to learn how to manage this stuff. So this week in class, it was a little bit about stress and workload for the kids. So maybe that's feeding into the picture too.
Well, bro, listen, keep supporting those kids.
Yep, for sure.
Keep doing what you need to do for yourself and your family. And you know where to find me if you need to talk.
Take care, man. Great chatting with you again.
Peace.
Peace, man.